On June 16th of 1851, William Johnson, who was known as the Barber of Natchez, was ambushed and murdered. 75 years later, his diary was discovered in the attic of his home, and the story of his life has become one of the most important firsthand historical accounts of life in the antebellum South. Why is his account so significant, and how did the man who murdered Johnson get away with it? This is the story of the Barber of Natchez. This is Southern Mysteries.
It's gonna be all right. These ain't dark or troubled times. It's a day like any other day. You got a dark and troubled mind, all right. You hold that baby tight, and I swear if you can hear me, then everything gonna be just fine, all right. All right.
Welcome to episode 15 of Southern Mysteries. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. This is the third of four episodes in the Mysteries, Myths, and Legends of Natchez, Mississippi series. In September of 2017, I traveled from my home near Jackson, Mississippi, down to Natchez. Now, a friend joined me for the two-hour drive. I'd planned to photograph some sites in the city, but we agreed to do something different. We agreed to stop at the Natchez Visitor Center, walk in, find the first person to answer this question. If you only had a few hours in Natchez, where would you want to go? What would you want to experience? When we arrived at the visitor center that sits on the bluff high above the Mississippi River, we walked in to find a very sweet and helpful woman who listened to our question and immediately said, "Have you ever heard of William Johnson, the Barber of Natchez? If you've never been to his house, that's what you need to go see in Natchez today." I had visited Natchez many times, but somehow I had never heard of William Johnson or been to his home. And I'm so thankful for the woman who directed us to his home near the corner of State and Canal Street. It's situated near an old railroad depot, and it's easy to miss. The home looks like a typical two-story historic brick structure that serves as a business in downtown Natchez. Living quarters upstairs, business downstairs. It's not one of the grand antebellum homes that you would see across the South, but the story of its former occupants and the life he led in Natchez is one of historical value, thanks to William Johnson's own words. In 1938, his business and personal journals were discovered in the attic of the home. And in 1951, the story of Johnson's life was published and released under the title William Johnson's Natchez, The Antebellum Diary of a Free Negro. You see, William Johnson was a free man of color in the antebellum South. William Johnson was born into slavery in 1809. His mother, Amy, was a slave, and his father, her slave master, was a white planter named William Johnson Sr. But William Johnson Jr. was raised as a legitimate son. He was even taught to read and write, which was illegal to teach blacks at the time, but Johnson was taught in secret. His father wished for his son to be free and petitioned the Mississippi legislature for permission because in Mississippi, any attempt to free a slave had to be approved by the state. On February 10, 1820, the Mississippi governor approved the petition and William Johnson Jr. officially became a free man of color in the state of Mississippi. Johnson's sister, Adelia, was also a free person of color. She married a barber named James Miller. Miller trained William Johnson to become a barber, and by 1830, Johnson moved from Port Gibson, Mississippi, to Natchez to pursue his trade. In April of 1835, Johnson married a former slave named Ann Battles. Together, they would have 10 children. Johnson worked hard to achieve success as a businessman in Natchez, and between 1835 and 1850, he acquired three barber shops where a haircut cost 25 cents and a shave 12 cents. He also owned a bathhouse in Natchez where 75 cents would buy you a hot bath. Johnson was able to purchase a plantation with 750 acres of farm and timberland that he referred to as hard scrabble. Along with his businesses, Johnson attained success and was always looking for more ways to attain money and standing in the community. And one way he was able to do that was to become a creditor of sorts in Natchez. He loaned money to many people, including the governor of Mississippi, who had signed the very papers to free Johnson in 1820. William Johnson was well respected and trusted in the community. Often single mothers would drop off their kids at Johnson's home when they were 10, 11, 12 years old. And he would not only take them in, but would teach them the barber trade. And he would take on a father figure role, making sure these young men stayed on the right track, were educated, even went to church, teaching them to become strong men of color. Despite all of his success, William Johnson was a man between worlds, a successful free man of color in the antebellum South, but he was mixed race. He didn't completely fit in with the white community. By law, he wasn't allowed to vote or serve in a militia, and he didn't fit in with the slave community because William Johnson was a slave owner. You may wonder how common it was for free people of color to own slaves in America. Henry Louis Gates Jr. has written about this. Gates is not only the host of Finding Your Roots on PBS, he also serves as the director of the W.E.B. Du Bois Institute for African and African American Research at Harvard University. In 2013, he published a piece in The Root that spoke to the reality of black slave ownership in America, noting the reality of free black people in America owning slaves dates back to 1654. Records of slave ownership by free people of color continued through the Civil War. Gates notes two theories that often explain why free blacks purchased slaves. One theory, that it was an act to free family members as slaves in order to protect them. Another, that free people of color purchased other black people as an act of exploitation, primarily to exploit their free labor for profit, just as white slave owners did. In his research, Gates found that both are true, writing, "It is a very sad aspect of African American history that slavery sometimes could be a colorblind affair, and that the evil business of owning another human being could manifest itself in both males and females, and in black as well as white." Now, records show that in 1850, 12% of free blacks in Mississippi owned slaves. 70% of those slave owners were of mixed race. William Johnson's motive for slave ownership seems to be profit, as no member of his family was a slave. In 1995, a historian who teaches 19th and 20th century American history at Cornell University, his name is Nick Salvatore, he published a review of an updated edit of William Johnson's diary. Salvatore noted that despite detailed notes in William Johnson's diaries about business and daily events, Johnson was mostly silent on big issues, such as his personal opinions of larger political issues of his time, including his personal opinion of slavery in antebellum Mississippi and the fact that he was a former slave and owned slaves. Salvatore writes, "Johnson made choices from the options available to him and suffered the consequences as they developed. But his history underscores the fact that slavery generated a corresponding social system that was unforgiving to the individual caught in its contradictory currents. What bound William Johnson to Mississippi, what inner torment in search of resolution drove him to a relentless acquiring of material possessions, how he understood his identification with the dominant racial group that kept him at a far distance and would have kept him enslaved but for chance. The diary provides us only with silence on these and similar tensions. William Johnson's diary, with its paradoxes, hidden conflicts, and unresolved contradictions, allows the reader a glimpse of the social context the author lived in, but could take little comfort from." The diaries of William Johnson may not give us answers as to Johnson's thoughts on slavery, but they do give us an important record and window into the daily life of a free man of color in the antebellum South. Johnson kept his diary from 1835 to 1851. You can tell William Johnson never planned for his life and detailed records in his diary to become a vital piece of American history. He wrote honestly and without limitations of knowing someone would someday find his diary in his home on State Street in Natchez. Primarily, he kept his diary as a record of his business dealings and the loans and repayment of loans he was making to people in the community. But the diary also records his everyday activities and events he witnessed during his life. In all, there are 2,000 pages and notes about his life. He even included illustrations with small drawings of incidents he witnessed. An entry from 1839 includes a detailed and slightly gruesome sounding description of an accident he witnessed. Johnson writes, "Steam cars ran over an old black woman and mashed both her legs off. Two doctors were brought to the scene and each took one leg and, as Johnson so vividly details, carved to suit himself Without working together, each doctor amputated a leg on the spot. And Johnson also shares about those days when he and his wife would quarrel, like any married couple does. On August 13th of 1842, he writes, "I had last night and this morning together several quarrels with my wife. She commenced it. Of course, I did not have a great deal to say. All amounts to nothing, for I can't say that I said anything to hurt her feelings that I believed myself whilst I was talking. I only did it in a spirit of retaliation." Johnson also wrote many entries about dramatic events that unfolded around the 1840 presidential election. And as it turns out, presidential elections have always been dramatic and tense. And in this case, it took a very long time to elect someone. The election to name the 9th president of the United States was held from Friday, October 30th to Wednesday, December 2nd of 1840. President Martin Van Buren fought for re-election against an economic depression and a new Whig party that unified for the first time behind war hero William Henry Harrison. The Whigs easily defeated Van Buren, but the decision was not made quickly, as Johnson notes in his diary, writing on November 2nd of 1840. "Today is the first day of the presidential election, and I saw at one time 163 persons come in at one time in the courthouse yard to vote, and they all were at that time followers of the Tumblebug Ball, properly named, I think. The ball was rolled up and down the different streets and then under the hill and up, and there was nothing wise about the concern that I could see." Okay, so this requires some explanation. The Tumblebug Ball may not be something you're familiar with in American history. The tumblebug, or dung beetle as it's called today, it's a disgusting little bug that lays its eggs in dung, as people said back in the 1840s, and then pushes it into a burrow in the earth. Now, during the 1840 election, the Whig Party would roll this gigantic ball from town to town to arouse enthusiasm from crowds in the towns they would pass through. See, I told you, elections dramatic back then, just as they are now. Well, the Democrats dubbed this ball the Tumblebug Ball to add a negative connotation to it. But what William Johnson writes in his diary on November 3rd of 1840 makes it evident that the Democrats passionately despise that gigantic ball. He writes, "The election is still going on. The great Tumblebug Ball was stolen last night by someone that had more sense than the man that made it and demolished the thing and rolled it down the bluff, virtually destroying the Tumblebug Ball." William Johnson wrote his last journal entry on June 14th of 1851. 2 days later, on June 16th, 42-year-old William Johnson was murdered. In the late 1840s, Johnson became involved in a dispute with Baylor Wynn, who was also a free man of color. Their dispute was over a property line on his plantation. The circuit court ordered a survey, and in May of 1851, the dispute was settled out of court because Johnson no longer wished to be at odds with Baylor Wynn. But on June 16th of 1851, Johnson was murdered by Wynn. A Natchez paper printed this account of the dreadful murder of William Johnson. "On Monday evening last, just at dusk, as Mr. William Johnson, an esteemed citizen and long known as the proprietor of the fashionable barber shop on Main Street, when returning from his plantation a few miles from the city, was fired upon and killed from the roadside. He was accompanied by two or three young persons, one of them being his son. The oldest boy with him, named Hoggart, was desperately wounded by the same shot. Johnson was seen to fall as if killed instantly, and the rest of the party, the wounded boy with them, made a rapid flight as they could to Natchez and gave the alarm. Dr. Blackburn, in his carriage, instantly repaired to the spot and found Johnson lying on his face, apparently insensible. On turning him over, he groaned, and when the doctor gave him some cordial, he revived sufficiently to speak. The first words announced the name of his murderer, and also did his last, as he died in great distress at his family residence at 2 o'clock the following morning. About an hour after Johnson's death, Baylor Wynn was arrested and brought to the city jail. But what happened next is a reminder that justice for a man of color, whether free or enslaved at this time in Mississippi, was hard to come by. Despite Johnson identifying Baylor Wynn as his murderer, the case was not simple. Those two free black men, including one of Johnson's sons, and enslaved man that witnessed the murder played a key role in the case. Baylor Wynn successfully escaped prosecution when his lawyers presented evidence that Baylor Wynn was white, not a free man of color. Lawyers claimed that Wynn was mixed race with a white mother and an American Indian father. This was important because a black man could not testify against a non-black. After 2 years of trying to refute Wynn's claims, the state dropped the case and Baylor Wynn, William Johnson's murderer, was set free. An indication of Johnson's standing in the community was noted in the articles published by area newspapers in the days after his murder, with one writing, "The murder has created a great deal of excitement, as well from its atrocity as from the peaceable character of William Johnson and his excellent standing. His funeral services were conducted by the Reverend Mr. Watkins, who paid a just tribute to his memory, holding up his example as one well worthy of imitation by all of his class. We observe very many of our most respected citizens at his funeral. This event has made a deep and painful impression upon our community." Now, William Johnson's death was shocking to his community that respected him and held him in high standing. He was buried in the white section of Natchez City Cemetery, which also speaks to his status in the city at the time of his death. Following his death, William Johnson's diary was packed away, forgotten, until the day in 1935 when the diary was found in the attic of his home and his story was revealed. Johnson's life was marked by his success in Natchez, but also by his choices that are questioned to this day. But a diary entry from 1848 records Johnson's humanity and struggle to overcome the loss of his mother and sister, and in turn speaks to choices we have today. Do we live in the past or strive to free ourselves from darkness, whether from outside forces or those forces on the inside? Johnson writes, "Oh, how sad, how very sad I feel tonight. But alas, it is folly to mourn over the past, the relentless past, which all my sighs can never recall. On the future lies my only hope of happiness. I can but try, and if I fail, try again." Southern Mysteries is hosted and produced by me, Shannon Ballard. To see photos of William Johnson's home and learn more about his diary, join our Facebook discussion group. Just search for Southern Mysteries Podcast. You can also connect on Twitter. We're at Mysteries Pod. If you've enjoyed listening to Southern Mysteries, I hope you'll take a moment and rate and review the show on iTunes. It really does help other people discover the show. And make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode. Thanks for listening.